Chapter 11. Yes. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well, I have taken this house for 2 or 3 months, and you will be very useful to me. You still live just outside the wall? Apostrophe, yes, sir, apostrophe, said the self-contained girl. Demurely and dispassionately she turned to leave this pretty creature with features so still. There was something strange in seeing move off thus that form which he knew passing well, she who was once so throbbingly alive to his presence that, not many yards from this spot, as he had flung her arms round him, and given him a kiss which, despised in its freshness, had revived in him latterly as the dearest kiss of all his life. And now this taps of her mother, as they called her in the dialect here, this perfect copy, why did she turn away? Your mother was a refined and well-informed woman, I think I remember? Apostrophe, apostrophe, she was, sir, everybody said so. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I hope you resemble her. Apostrophe, apostrophe, she archly shook her head, and drew warily away. Oh, one thing more, a vice. I have not brought much linen, so you must come to the house every day. Apostrophe, apostrophe, very good, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you won't forget that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, oh no. Apostrophe, apostrophe, then he let her go. He was a town man, and she an artless islander, yet he had opened himself out, like a sea anemone, without disturbing the epiderm of her nature. It was monstrous that a maiden who had assumed the personality of her of his tenderest memory should be so impervious. Perhaps it was he who was wanting. A vice might be passion masking as indifference, because he was so many years older in outward show. This brought him to the root of it. In his heart he was not a day older than when he had wooed the mother at the daughter's present age. His record moved on with the years, his sentiments stood still. When he beheld those of his fellows who were defined as buffers and fogies imperturbable, matter-of-fact, slightly ridiculous beings, past masters in the art of populating homes, schools, and colleges, and present adepts in the science of giving away brides, how he envied them, assuming them to feel as they appeared to feel, with their commerce and their politics, their glasses and their pipes. They had got past the distracting currents of passionateness, and were in the calm waters of middle-aged philosophy. But he, their contemporary, was tossed like a cork hither and thither upon the crest of every fancy, precisely as he had been tossed when he was half his present age, with the burden now of double pain to himself in his growing vision of all as vanity. A vice had gone, and he saw her no more that day. Since he could not again call upon her, she was as inaccessible as if as he had entered the military citadel on the hilltop beyond them. In the evening he went out, and paced down the lane to the Red King's castle overhanging the cliff, beside whose age the castle he occupied was but a thing of yesterday. Below the castle precipice lay enormous blocks, which had fallen from it, and several of them were carved over with names and initials. He knew the spot and the old trick well, and by searching in the faint moon rays he found a pair of names which, as a boy, he himself had cut. They were a vice, and Jocelyn a vice Caro's and his own. The letters were now nearly worn away by the weather and the brine. But close by, in quite fresh letters, stood Anne a vice, apostrophe coupled with the name Isaac. Apostrophe, they could not have been there more than 2 or 3 years, and the Anne a vice was probably a vice the second. Who was Isaac? Some boy admirer of her child time doubtless. He retraced his steps, and passed the Caro's house towards his own. The revivified device animated the dwelling, and the light within the room fell upon the window. She was just inside that blind. Whenever she unexpectedly came to the castle he started, and lost placidity. It was not at her presence as such, but at the new condition, which seemed to have something sinister in it. On the other hand, the most abrupt encounter with him moved her to no emotion as it had moved her prototype in the old days. She was indifferent to, almost unconscious of, his propinquity. He was no more than a statue to her, she was a growing fire to him. a sudden sapphic terror of love would ever, and anon come upon the sculptor, when his matured reflecting powers would insist upon informing him of the fearful lapse from reasonableness that lay in this infatuation. It threw him into a sweat. What if now, at last, he were doomed to do penance for his past emotional wanderings in a material sense, by being chained in fatal fidelity to an object that his intellect despised? One night he dreamt that he saw dimly masking behind that young countenance the weaver of wiles herself, with all her subtle face laughing aloud. Apostrophe, apostrophe, however, the well-beloved was alive again, had been lost and was found. He was amazed at the change of front in himself. As he had worn the guise of strange women, as he had been a woman of every class, from the dignified daughter of some ecclesiastic, or peer to a Nubian Alma with her handkerchief, undulating to the beats of the tom-tom. But all these embodiments had been endowed with a certain smartness, either of the flesh or spirit. Some with wit, a few with talent, and even genius. But the new impersonation had apparently nothing beyond sex and prettiness. She knew not how to sport a fan or handkerchief, hardly how to pull on a glove. But her limited life was innocent, and that went far. Poor little Avice, her mother's image. There it all lay. After all, her parentage was as good as his own. It was misfortune that had sent her down to this. Odd as it seemed to him, her limitations were largely what he loved her for. Her rejuvenating power over him had ineffable charm. He felt as he had felt when standing beside her predecessor. But, alas, he was 20 years further on towards the shade. 2.7. The new becomes established. A few mornings later he was looking through an upper back window over a screened part of the garden. The door beneath him opened, and a figure appeared tripping forth. She went round out of sight to where the gardener was at work, and presently returned with a bunch of green stuff fluttering in each hand. It was a vice, her dark hair now braided up snugly under a cap. She sailed on with a rapt and unconscious face, her thoughts a thousand removes from him. How as he had suddenly come to be an inmate of his own house he could not understand, till he recalled the fact that he had given the castle servants a whole holiday to attend a review of the yeomanry in the watering place over the bay, on their stating that they could provide a temporary substitute to stay in the house. They had evidently called in a vice. To his great pleasure he discovered their opinion of his requirements to be such a mean one that they had called in no one else. The spirit, as she seemed to him, brought his lunch into the room where he was writing, and he beheld her uncover it. She went to the window to adjust a blind which had slipped, and he had a good view of her profile. It was not unlike that of one of the three goddesses in Rubens' Judgment of Paris, apostrophe and in contour was nigh perfection. But it was in her full face that the vision of her mother was most apparent. Did you cook all this, Avice? Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked, arousing himself. She turned and half smiled, merely murmuring, yes, sir. Apostrophe, apostrophe, well he knew the arrangement of those white teeth. In the junction of two of the upper ones there was a slight irregularity. No stranger would have noticed it, nor would he, but that he knew of the same mark in her mother's mouth, and looked for it here. Till a vice the second had revealed at this moment by her smile, he had never beheld that mark since the parting from a vice the first, when as he had smiled under his kiss as the copy had done now. Next morning, when dressing, he heard her through the rickety floor of the building engaged in conversation with the other servants. Having by this time regularly installed herself as the exponent of the long pursuit as one who, by no initiative of his own, had been chosen by some superior power as the vehicle of her next debut, she attracted him by the cadences of her voice. She would suddenly drop it to a rich whisper of roguishness, when the slight rural monotony of its narrative speech disappeared, and soul and heart, or what seemed soul and heart resounded. The charm lay in the intervals, using that word in its musical sense. She would say a few syllables in one note, and end her sentence in a soft modulation upwards, then downwards, then into her own note again. The curve of sound was as artistic as any line of beauty ever struck by his pencil, as satisfying as the curves of her who was the world's desire. The subject of her discourse he cared nothing about, it was no more his interest than his concern. He took special pains that in catching her voice he might not comprehend her words. To the tones he had a right, none to the articulations. By degrees he could not exist long without this sound. On Sunday evening he found that she went to church. He followed behind her over the open road, keeping his eye on the little hat with its bunch of cock's feathers, as on a star. When as he had passed in, Pearson observed her position, and took a seat behind her. Engaged in the study of her ear, and the nape of her white neck, he suddenly became aware of the presence of a lady still further ahead in the aisle, whose attire, though of black materials in the quietest form, was of a cut which rather suggested London than this Ultima Thule. For the minute he forgot, in his curiosity, that a vice intervened. The lady turned her head somewhat, and, though she was veiled with unusual thickness for the season, he seemed to recognize Nicola Pinavon in the form. Why should Mrs. Pinavon be there? Pearson asked himself, if it should, indeed, be she. The end of the service saw his attention again concentrated on the vice to such a degree, that at the critical moment of moving out he forgot the mysterious lady in front of her, and found that as he had left the church by the side door, supposing it to have been Mrs. Pinavon, she would probably be discovered staying at one of the hotels at the watering place over the bay, and to have come along the pebble bank to the island as so many did, for an evening drive. For the present, however, the explanation was not forthcoming, and he did not seek it. When he emerged from the church, the great placid eye of the lighthouse at the Beale Point was open, and he moved thitherward a few steps to escape Nicola, or her double, and the rest of the congregation. Turning at length, he hastened homeward along the now deserted trackway, intending to overtake the revitalized device. But he could see nothing of her, and concluded that as he had walked too fast for him. Arrived at his own gate he paused a moment, and perceived that Avice's little freehold was still in darkness. As he had not come, he retraced his steps, but could not find her, the only persons on the road, being a man and his wife, as he knew them to be though he could not see them, from the words of the man, "If you had not already married me, you'd cut my acquaintance." That's a pretty thing for a wife to say. ... The remark struck his ear unpleasantly, and by he went back again. Avice's cottage was now lighted. She must have come round by the other road. Satisfied that she was safely domiciled for the night, he opened the gate of Sylvania Castle, and retired to his room also. Eastward from the grounds the cliffs were rugged, and the view of the opposite coast picturesque in the extreme. A little door from the lawn gave him immediate access to the rocks and shore on this side. Without the door was a dip well of pure water, which possibly had supplied the inmates of the adjoining, and now ruinous Red King's Castle at the time of its erection. On a sunny morning he was meditating here, when he discerned a figure on the shore below spreading white linen upon the pebbly strand. Jocelyn descended. Avice, as he had supposed, had now returned to her own occupation. Her shapely pink arms, though slight, were plump enough to show dimples at the elbows, and were set off by her purple cotton print, which the shore breeze licked and tantalized. He stood near, without speaking. The wind dragged a shirt sleeve from the popple, or pebble which held it down. Pearson stooped and put a heavier one in its place. "Thank you, ..." she said quietly. She turned up her hazel eyes, and seemed gratified to perceive that her assistant was Pearson. As he had plainly been so wrapped in her own thoughts, gloomy thoughts, by their signs, that as he had not considered them till then. The young girl continued to converse with him in friendly frankness, showing neither ardor nor shyness. As for love, it was evidently further from her mind than even death and dissolution. When one of the sheets became intractable, Jocelyn said, "Do you hold it down, and I'll put the popples." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she acquiesced, and in placing a pebble his hand touched hers. It was a young hand, rather long and thin, a little damp and coddled from her slopping. In setting down the last stone he laid it, by a pure accident, rather heavily on her fingers. "I am very, very sorry," apostrophe, apostrophe, Jocelyn exclaimed. "Oh, I have bruised the skin, a vice." Apostrophe, apostrophe, he seized her fingers to examine the damage done. "No, sir, you haven't." Apostrophe, apostrophe, she cried luminously, allowing him to retain her hand without the least objection. "Why, that's where I scratched it this morning with a pin. You didn't hurt me a bit with the popple stone." Apostrophe, apostrophe, although her gown was purple, there was a little black crepe bow upon each arm. He knew what it meant, and it saddened him. "Do you ever visit your mother's grave?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, he asked. "Yes, sir, sometimes. I am going there tonight to water the daisies." Apostrophe, as he had now finished here, and they parted. That evening, when the sky was red, he emerged by the garden door and past her house. The blinds were not down, and he could see her sewing within. While he paused, she sprang up, as if he had forgotten the hour, and tossed on her hat. Jocelyn strode ahead, and round the corner, and was halfway up the straggling street, before he discerned her little figure behind him. He hastened past the lads and young women with clinking buckets who were drawing water from the fountains by the wayside, and took the direction of the church. With the disappearance of the sun, the lighthouse had again set up its flame against the sky, the dark church rising in the foreground. Here he allowed her to overtake him. "You loved your mother much?" apostrophe, apostrophe, said Jocelyn. "I did, sir, of course I did," apostrophe, said the girl, who tripped so lightly that it seemed he might have carried her on his hand. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.